This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
What are you eating in that place? What is that?
Beef jerky.
Beef jerky. Yes, a staple in our kitchen area. Feeling a little peckish, I see. Breaking into the beef jerky. Good for you.
You know, Ken and I used to eat beef jerky like every night. And if you notice, there's been a lot of it around lately because since Ken's been gone, I haven't been eating it as much. So tonight I said, let me just dip into that beef jerky.
Yeah, there you go. Enjoy it. All right. You know, long before my wife and I had a child, and I think even before we were married, might have even been before we were engaged. I think we might have just been dating. We were talking about growing up and the things that it's important for a child to have in their life. And one of the things my wife volunteered to me, and I don't think this was sort of out of the blue. I'm sure it was related to something. This is many years ago, this conversation. She says, I think it's so important for every child to grow up with a pet. Whatever the pet is, dog, cat, hamster, I don't know, rabbit, whatever the pet is, it's a nice thing for a child to have that kind of a relationship with a pet. And I agree. I do think it's very important to, you know, for every child to grow up with a pet. I think it's a good thing. Well, my father was over yesterday and he told me this story, which I thought somebody had made up. I thought he either didn't understand it or it was exaggerated or it was a viral hoax. Sure enough, apparently it's 100% true. And he told me about this and I am just blown away. So it all begins with a 9-year-old boy in Oklahoma by the name of Cal Clifford. Cal Clifford, his parents said their son wanted an octopus as a pet more than anything in the world, starting when he was just a toddler. Can we stop there? Can we? Let's just pause. My son likes octopuses or octopi. He got a toy octopus recently. We have a book that has an octopus in it. He points at it. He says, octopus. I forget where we were. Oh, I know exactly where we were. We were at swimming lessons on Saturday, and they throw toys in the pool for the children to swim to. And the toy that he got the biggest kick out of was not a rubber ducky, but an octopus. And he said, what's that? I said, it's an octopus. He got a kick out of it. He could ask me for the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years to get him a pet octopus. You know what? We're not getting him a pet octopus. We're not getting him a pet alligator. We're not getting him a pet gorilla. The pets that he is limited to will probably be things like, I don't know, cats, dogs. I'd say the list ends there. If the kid wants a hermit crab when he's around 7, okay, we could talk about a hermit crab. You want to make a, you want to talk about some, a goldfish down the line? All right. I can tell you what he's not getting, an octopus. What the heck is going on in Oklahoma where they would consider getting a child an octopus? But sure enough, this is what they did. They attempted to fulfill his little boy dreams with toy octopuses, but he continued to beg for the real thing. And in October of last year, the boy's father, Cameron Clifford, a dentist, decided to make his son's dreams come true. After doing research at an aquarium store, he purchased a California 2-spot octopus, which is called a Bimac. The family named him, or so they thought, Terrence. Nice little octopus named Terrence. And his son loved it. They thought it said it was magical to see his son embrace his pet. and saying that his son has been infatuated with the natural world and marine biology since he was very little. I think that's great, by the way, that the child is into marine biology. I have to think there's a better way to foster an interest in marine biology than by getting him an octopus. I really do. So Cameron Clifford began documenting the adventures of Terrence the octopus on TikTok, posting under the account of Doctopus. Okay. As of Tuesday, the account had more than 425,000 followers. Well, a video posted in early March shows Cal Clifford, the little boy, bursting into tears when he learned that his parents had bought a tank and filters required for a pet octopus. Because shortly after adopting Terrence, the Clifford family learned that their pet was actually a female. Terrence laid 50 eggs, and those 50 eggs hatched several weeks later, even though the family thought they were unfertilized. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, I can't even. They don't make enough of the type of drug that would need to be required to calm my wife down after there was 50 octopus eggs that then hatched into 50 baby octopi. The pet's name was not changed, even though they knew he was a she. Maybe he's a transgender octopus. After the eggs hatched, the Cliffords were suddenly the parents of several dozen California two-spot octopus babies, and the family hopes to move the baby octopuses to aquariums and research facilities, and they've appealed on TikTok for assistance in contacting facilities as well as naming the babies. Guys, this is so, again, they're TikTok stars now. We're talking about them on the radio. Maybe they're the ones that get the last laugh. I find this to be so incredibly irresponsible. I'm an animal lover, and it's great that they want to take care of octopuses. Octopuses should not be a household pet. Period. Period. End of story. There's a whole category of animals that, in my view, should not live in homes. They should live out there in the wild. Tigers, I would say most varieties of chimp or ape. Octopus should not happen. Here is this Cameron Clifford talking to Good Morning America.
Beyonce was like this like hippie octopus, and then Swim Shady, he's just like tentacles in the air.
My wife named that one JC. So I think Bill Nye the Octopi is the most recent.
Hi, buddy.
When the babies started hatching faster than I could kind of catch them, I had to move a lot of them into the bathroom in these small containers because they would eat each other if they were put in the same container.
Oh, my goodness. He has to move them because they're moving faster than he could catch them, but he has got to separate them because they would eat each other. They're going to eat each other. Don't get pets where the progeny will eat one another. Don't get pets that are too quick for you to catch as soon as they're born. And by the way, they had to maintain an ocean-like environment for the octopus, meaning salt water and the whole deal. Cautionary tale, or in the case of the octopus, maybe 8 cautionary tales. Am I off base here? I don't think so. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. My mother, who I don't think ever told me no once, it's probably one of the reasons I'm the way that I am today. I think even she would never have gotten me an octopus if I wanted an octopus as a pet. To me, this is not something parents should be doing. Toy octopus, absolutely. Maybe even a trip to the aquarium. I know people have varying views about aquariums and animals being in captivity. Okay. But to get a child a pet octopus, and seeing what could happen. No one should ever do this, in my view. 800-848-9222. Here's a little bit of audio from the Doc Toctopus father-son TikTok channel. This is text-to-speech voice, so it may sound a little weird. This is them discovering that the eggs were fertilized.
One night, while cleaning Terence's tank, one of the eggs became detached from the den. I had never seen one up close, so I gently grabbed it, took it between my fingers, and examined it under her light. Although inherently clear, the egg had two, almost microscopic, black dots in the center. Before I could internalize what I was seeing, the egg deflated, and a large, clear droplet burst from the top. The droplet then spread out 8 tiny tentacles.
Wow. Jeffrey Lichtman's going to join me in a few minutes. He is a veteran criminal defense attorney. We're going to talk about this Trump case. And he's also very involved in the Middle East. Well, I don't know if he's involved. He's very passionate about the Middle East. So he's going to join me to share his views on that as well. But there was another interesting story that caught my eye out of Italy. A new excavation has uncovered some of Pompeii's finest artworks yet. When I was in Italy about 5 years ago, I got to visit Pompeii, and I was really impressed at some of the things that I've seen. But this is, if you don't know, this was an ancient Roman city that was buried when Mount Vesuvius erupted in 79 AD. And despite centuries of archaeological work, a third of the city still remains covered. In the largest dig in a generation, most of a commercial and residential area that they're calling Region 9 is being excavated. And among the many treasures discovered is a huge black-walled banqueting hall with a near-complete mosaic floor of more than 1 million white tiles, along with beautiful frescoes of Apollo's attempts to seduce the priestess Cassandra and the consequences of her rejecting him. So I think that's kind of cool that this many thousands of years later, they're still making discoveries from the ancient world. 800-848-9222. Neil, what's on your mind?
Frank, I don't understand. I mean, you're Italian. You should want to get those octopuses for the Sunday gravy.
You know, I like to eat octopus, and I feel bad about it because I mean, grilled octopus with a little lemon is one of my favorite things. It's one of my go-to orders in every restaurant, and I'm afraid to watch that film, that documentary, My Octopus Teacher, because honestly, I don't want to know how smart they are. And my dad was telling me yesterday, and thanks, Neil, that they are smart, and this pet octopus, Terrence, was actually... he would raise his hand, or in his hand, his, I don't know, his tentacle, to wave at the little boy that he would play with. Now, that makes me feel really bad about this. I think I may have to stop eating octopus. It killed me to do it, but I may have to do it. I don't see how I can justify that. All right. Jeffrey Lichtman joins us to talk the law, the Middle East, and more straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
There is one thing I never have to worry about when Jeffrey Lichtman is a guest on this program. I never have to worry about getting drowsy, because every moment when I am interviewing Jeffrey Lichtman, I am absolutely riveted. Sometimes I'm trying to pick my jaw up off the floor because I can't believe what he just said. At other times, I'm laughing. At other times, I'm trying to conceal my laughter because I know I've just laughed at something that could get me canceled. But throughout it all, I am am in awe of his mind, his wit, and the fact that he is one of the most astute legal analysts around. If this is your first time hearing Jeffrey Lichtman, you are in for a treat. You may love him, you may hate him, but still love to listen to him. He's the host of the Beyond the Legal Limit podcast, also a veteran criminal defense attorney who has represented some of the boldest faced names in the history of the criminal justice system, and that is not an exaggeration. I am very pleased to welcome back to the program the one and only Jeffrey Lichtman. Hi, Jeff.
Wow, Frank, I think that was your best introduction ever for me. No, really, and that says a lot.
I appreciate that. All right, Jeff, there's a lot of stuff that I want to go into with you in a short amount of time, so let's do it. Let me begin by asking about this Trump trial that's going on. We've seen jury selection this week. The first day, about half of the potential jurors were dismissed because they said they couldn't be impartial. I first got to meet you when you were representing someone with the name of John Gotti, and that, I thought, was a tough case where it would be tough to find jurors who are impartial. And I'm wondering if you could take our listeners behind the scenes of what it's like to represent someone in a criminal case when almost every potential juror has a preconceived notion about that person or about the guilt or innocence of that person.
Well, it's not easy because at least with the Gotti case, everybody assumed he was guilty. His father was convicted. His uncle had been convicted of similar charges in that same courthouse just the year prior. So we would go through the jury pool, just running through it, and every single person said, well, I think he's guilty. And finally, I complained to the judge and said, what are we going to do? And she said, hey, this is what it is. We're not going to find people that think that he's innocent. We're just going to find people that say that they're willing to have an open mind, to keep their mind open, even though they think he's guilty right now. And that was the best we could do. So inevitably, you're going to get people on the jury who thought that he was guilty, but they said they would try to keep an open mind. And that was really, really difficult. I remember the government like laughing at me because they thought the case was so over before we even gave opening statements. Mm. Because nobody could say they thought he was innocent. And with regard to Trump, I mean, most people in the New York City jury pool hate his guts because this is what New York City is. And it's very difficult. So you're going to have people that are going to say that, well, I'm willing to keep an open mind. But many of them are lying because they want to convict him. So you have to, in the voir dire, at least in the state, you can question the jury. In the feds, you know, we had a question. We weren't allowed to stand up and grill these people. It's much more difficult in the federal case.
So if you're representing Donald Trump in this case, what are you looking for in a juror? What kind of person do you want on this jury?
Well, you want somebody who's not a flaming liberal to begin with. You want somebody
but
who's...
You can't really ask. I mean, you could ask what outlets they listen to or watch, which is usually something of an indication, but I don't think there's a check for a political party that you can disqualify someone, is there?
You can figure it out. I mean, look, you know, the one thing that shocked me with this jury selection, they pick six jurors in one day. I mean, this should take weeks for a guy like Trump. You go through every single juror with a fine-tooth comb. You're carefully questioning them. You're looking for even the slightest hint of bias. You're challenging for cause every single juror. All you want to do in a case like this, if you're representing Donald Trump in New York City, is throw as many chairs into the path of the onrushing bull as you can, and with the hopes that at some point there will be a stumble and a screw up. And that's what you have to do to get six chosen in one day. I'm going to say this respectfully. I don't know what these defense lawyers are doing.
Yeah, you've been critical. I mean, look, there's so many different Trump cases, and I've asked you about many over the last year. The one commonality in all these cases, and there's very different facts in a lot of these cases, both criminal and civil, you've been pretty critical of the various Trump legal teams. From what you've seen here in this case so far, which nobody's ever been prosecuted by the Manhattan DA for this, even the New York Times called this a novel legal theory, and they're certainly not Trump apologists. Are you not impressed with this Trump legal team in this case?
I'm impressed with one lawyer that he's had thus far is a fellow that's handling the DC case named John Lauro, who I know, and he's very smart. He's a good guy and he's personable and he's a good lawyer. So far, otherwise, you know, his lawyers have been mostly garbage, not all of them, but mostly complete and utter stinking actual garbage, not just metaphorically speaking garbage, but actual piles of garbage. So, you know, this group, you know, there's some good lawyers on it, you know, decent lawyers, but it's very tough with the Trump. You've got to really have a strong personality, a likable personality that's going to convince people to go against what they strongly believe, which is that they hate Donald Trump and they want him convicted. I don't know that this is the group to do it, respectfully. I don't see it. But I also don't think that he's even remotely guilty of the top felony charge. I think he's going to be convicted of the misdemeanor. But all you've got to get is one juror. I mean, there's 12 people on a jury, Frank. Are all 12 liberals? In New York City, it's possible. More likely, probably 10 out of the 12. So you're going to have people that are that may refuse to convict because this is a really polarizing defendant. This is a really polarized country right now. So you get one Republican on that jury, and when you pick 12 people in New York City, decent chance you're going to get one or two. Republican.
Right, even in Manhattan, that's for sure.
Even in Manhattan.
Yeah.
What is it, 30%? There's a decent chance they're going to get a Republican. They may not get a conviction or may be hung.
You know, one of the things that I heard yesterday was that unlike a lot of courts, this court is actually not hearing arguments on Wednesday. And some folks, I think Alan Dershowitz may have even said that. He said that if that's true, that could be tough for observant Jews who want to observe the Sabbath and potentially sit on the jury to sit. And that would seem not to inure to Trump's benefit. Have you ever seen that before in either a state case or a federal case, a judge making the decision not to hear the case on Wednesdays?
Wednesdays? What's the excuse for Wednesdays?
I don't know. I don't have your courtroom experience, but I've never seen it. I'm curious if you have.
No. I mean, I've seen many trials. There's no court on Fridays.
Right. Same.
Just because it's a 4-day week and the day you're obviously going to take off is Friday. Wednesday is a little odd. I've never heard that. But look, it's New York City, which is a completely insane city at this point in history. And it's also a Trump case. So why should anything be even remotely normal or make any sense?
Yeah, fair enough. Last question about this, and then I want to pick your brain on a few other things that we can get into. I've been to the Manhattan Criminal Court, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners who live in Manhattan have either done jury duty there or been there for some reason. You know that compared to the federal courts that Trump has been in, it's pretty dingy. It's kind of dirty. It's very run down. How much of a step down for anyone, but especially someone like Trump, who generally spends his time in federal court, is it to go into this Manhattan Criminal Court?
Well, it's pretty nasty, but I mean, you know, he's just sitting at a defense table. It's not like he's, you know, licking the floors. I would say, you know, for the defense lawyers, trying a state case is a lot easier than trying a federal case because the jury that you get is oftentimes a little looser, a little more willing to be pushed around and perhaps not take the trial as seriously because it is in those confines as opposed to the very regal and serious federal court. Frank, I'm going to give you a secret right here. Ready for this?
I'm ready.
I've never lost a state case.
I've seen you win a couple, including that very high-profile case involving that that news reporter in New York that was very high-profile at the time, which everybody had the guy very, very guilty. So, by the way, in terms of, I'm sure the Trump people or some surrogate for Trump has reached out to you about doing something with him, without necessarily commenting on your personal situation, do you think the reason that maybe Trump is having a tough time getting top lawyers is because of Trump's history of paying or not paying his legal team?
Nobody respectfully with a brain wants to represent him. And I look, you know that I'm not a big fan of Trump, but I am a big fan of justice. And I feel that he's getting screwed badly here. Normally, I would be, you know, hell bent on representing Trump. But, you know, look, it's tough. First of all, he doesn't like to pay. That's the first thing. Second thing is is there enough money in the world to get paid when you're going to be abused so badly in the press and by the public? You're going to get stalked. You're going to get abused. It's horrible. There's just not really enough money. Third of all, he doesn't listen to you. So you give him advice and you say, listen, stop doing that. Stop making those faces. Stop speaking to the press. Stop. And he doesn't listen. So you know what at that point you do? You go F yourself. I'm not interested in representing you. There's not enough money in the world. So what he ends up getting, for the most part, is slop. People that want, you know, the publicity, people that never had any big case in their lives, and this is their big moment. I mean, you know, look, if I took Trump on as a client, it would cost me millions of dollars. I'd get abused, and I'd have a client that just wouldn't listen to right. me. You know, I would rather do other things, Frank. I don't know, like maybe a hot needle in my eye. Maybe I'd want to pull my fingernails off. You know, these are the kind of things I'd rather do. It's just not worth it for most sure. lawyers to get abused like that and then have to have difficulty getting paid. Look, I represent members of the Sinaloa cartel. I represented El Chapo. I represent all four of his sons right now. I represented his wife. Infinitely better than representing Donald Trump. But, you know, that's just how it is, man.
We're talking with Jeffrey Lichtman. You can hear him on the Beyond the Legal Limit podcast, which you can search on any podcast app or just go to the website beyondthelegallimit.com. Jeff, politically, where are you at this point? You were a Trump critic, but you seemed in our last conversation resigned to the fact that he was going to be the nominee, but not at all optimistic that he was going to win the general election. What's your personal interest in the election right now? And if you were to kind of make a prediction at this point where you see things going come to November, where do you think they're going?
Well, I would never vote Democrat for the rest of my life. For dog catcher, I wouldn't vote Democrat. If they were on fire in front of me, I wouldn't urinate on a Democrat at this point. So there's no chance that I would ever vote for a Democrat. I don't care who's running on the Republican side. With regard to Trump, look, I'm not a fan. I think he screwed up his 4 years. He didn't take the job seriously enough. I think he was the reason why the Republicans lost in 20. I think he's clownish. I think he's unlearned. I don't think he's a serious guy. And I think this country right now needs a serious guy who's going to go in there and take care of business. All that being said, look, do you see what's going on in New York City right now, Frank? Do you see what's going on across the country? Do you see what's going on at our southern border? Do you see the crime, the insanity, the madness, the economy? What's going on in this country? You have got to be out of your mind to vote for Joe Biden or whoever, assuming if he dies, is going to run in November. You have got to have lost your mind if you think that this country is going to be better off with four more years of Biden. We have Hezbollah and Hamas demonstrating loudly in the streets of Manhattan, all over every big city, shutting down airports. There is not a single Democrat that has spoken up about this and said, this is wrong. This is what this country has become. And you can vote for anybody but Trump. I don't like the man, all right? But of course I'd vote for Trump because I'm not insane, Frank, and I'd like America to actually survive. I love America. I don't hate America. You've got people that are speaking out publicly in Dearborn saying that America is the most rotten country and that America, death to America. This is happening in our country right now under Joe Biden, and no Democrat is opening up his yap? The hell with that. Of course you vote for Trump. Do I think he has a chance to win? No. I think he's going to lose. I think he's absolutely going to lose, and it makes me sick to my stomach that he's going to lose.
A quick question in terms of legal analysis. You know, we saw the armorer in that Rust movie get 18 months, and this is the case that Alec Baldwin is also charged in. Looking at that case objectively, you think Alec Baldwin's got a problem?
No. I mean, it's a completely different theory with regard to the armorer whose job was to deal with the gun. I mean, that's, you know, you have one job only. Let's see. Do you put live bullets in the gun,
right,
or do you put, you know, blanks in the gun? Live? I can't decide. I can't, you know, that's what happened with that girl. She clearly was not experienced enough. Nevertheless, she took the job. She screwed it up. She's got, I suppose, what she deserved in terms of a conviction. I think 18 months is a ridiculously high sentence. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right. But Alec Baldwin's going to say, what do you want from me, man? I was just, you know, I was just there. You know, I was there with the gun. They handed it to me. I'm not a gun guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any chance he's going to be convicted. I think, frankly, it's almost impossible to imagine that he'd be convicted.
The last time you were on the program, we were discussing what was going on at Columbia University, and you alluded to the fact that you were going to be representing one of the students at Columbia. I'm looking at a Southern District federal lawsuit that was filed where it's John Doe versus Columbia University. You're representing John Doe. Remind us what this case is all about here. Where's this going?
Well, this is a lawsuit that we filed today to sue Columbia University, and this is something I've been looking forward to for a long time. I mean, the place is an absolutely anti-Semitic cesspool. It's a dangerous place for Jewish students. You walk onto the campus, and if you're wearing a Star of David or a yarmulke on your head, there's a decent chance you're going to be attacked by snarling, vicious, psychotic, pro-Hamas terror students. You can't have any peace. People are not studying at Columbia, Frank. They're snarling and they're screaming and they're demonstrating and they're, you know, talking about killing Jews. You can't say from the river to the sea, Palestine. You're saying you want Israel to be destroyed. You just can't. That's what should not be how college is going to be. So what happened with my student? He was at a pro-Hamas rally, which was an unsanctioned rally. They already told us he couldn't have the rally. They don't care. They don't follow any rules. Rules don't matter to them when jihad is in the air. And he went there, and he had a $10.99 fart spray, Frank, that he got off of Amazon. I think it was called Wet Farts is what it was called, with a cartoon of somebody with his pants pulled down and his butt cheeks hanging out. And he sprayed it into the air. And of course, as you can imagine, the pro-Palestinian students, it was, you know, they were hit like with a skunk spray, they claim, with a biochemical weapon, bioterrorism, you know, every type of lie that they could make up. They're gasping. And of course, nobody went to the hospital then. But then as they realized this was an opportunity to exploit it, they claimed that they couldn't breathe. They couldn't see. They were vomiting for weeks. It's a non-toxic novelty spray that you get off of Amazon that you bring to parties. This was sprayed outside, but nobody stood up and said, hey, this was not a bioweapon. This is just a fart spray. Of course, Columbia got wind of it. Excuse the pun. They ended up charging both of the students there with this. We put in a response, told them that it was fart spray, and they ended up suspending these kids for 2 years. 2 years. Wow. For a fart spray. Now, what we did is we sued them not just for the suspension, but for the fact that Columbia, which has a over $13 billion endowment, Frank, think about that, over $13 billion, they also receive federal funding. But you're not allowed to receive federal funding if you violate Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. As you know, that you can't receive federal funding and also abuse Jews. As much as they want to abuse Jews, you're still not allowed to legally. The place is a completely anti-Semitic cesspool. And if you recall, when I was on the radio, I don't remember which station it was back about 10,
yeah, I think it was
multiple
stations about your commentary regarding Rashid Khalidi.
Right. Rashid Khalidi, who is a pro-terror Palestinian former spokesperson for the PLO, teaches at Columbia, and he was bringing over students from Muslim terror states. Guess what happens when you bring jihadist students over to Columbia, Frank, and they listen to me on the radio? You can imagine. You can't expect them to control themselves. They need to threaten lives. They need to threaten to kill. They need to threaten to murder. So one after another was getting picked up by Homeland Security and sent back to whatever jihadist hole that they came from, because you can't be violent. I know it's not right that jihadist students have their hobbies, but it can't be threatening the Jew on the radio. It just can't be, Frank. It's not. You can't threaten your professors. You can't threaten people on the. You just can't do it.
By the way, I've invited Rashid Khalidi on the radio on this program. He has declined all of my invitations to appear on this program. But this particular lawsuit, where you're representing this student that's been suspended for 2 years, what relief are you seeking other than a lifting of this suspension?
Well, we'd like to see them actually make a concerted, real effort to stop abusing Jews on campus. I know that's something that Colombia couldn't possibly agree to, because this is all they are. Their reason to exist is to hate Jews on campus. And this isn't something recent since October 7th. You know, I know there's been an explosion of anti-Semitism all across these leftist elite universities. This is something. Colombia is the ground zero of Jew hate on American universities. This has been going on for decades at Columbia. And look, here's the deal. I've been waiting a long time for this lawsuit, Frank. I've been practicing for 34 years. I've been waiting a long time for this one. And I'm telling you that they're not going to get off. I'm going to depose every one of those students who said that, you know, the spray, the chemical weapon against them was an endocrine disruptor. I'm going to get everybody in the faculty. I want it, all of it. Do all of it. We're not going to stop until every bit of anti-Semitism. I'm going to turn over every rock and see all the larvae, all the anti-Semitic larvae underneath. We're going to get it all, Frank.
You know, speaking of the Israel situation, and if people are just tuning in, we're talking with veteran criminal defense attorney Jeffrey Lichtman. You can check out his podcast, Beyond the Legal Limit. There's a lot of waiting and watching with respect to what's going to happen with Iran now. Iran carried out these attacks with drones and missiles, and a lot of people are claiming that Iran signaled to either Israel or the United States or some intermediary exactly what they were going to do so that they could save face and look like they were retaliating for the attack on their consulate, but not actually escalate this to the fact that it would to the stage that it would result in an attack on Iran. Where do you see this aspect of the war going now? You've been very, very outspoken that you're an unabashed anti-Hamas person and are for Israel all the way. What do you think should happen with respect to Israel and the possibility of further retaliation against Iran?
First of all, anybody who told you that Iran was doing this to save face and they tipped off Israel is an absolute idiot or a liar, or both.
Well, and by the way, Admiral Kirby is disputing that. He has said that didn't happen at all, that they did not get a heads up, but that's what's been reported.
They didn't get a heads up. It was 320 ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and loaded drones, and they're coming from six different directions at the same time. If any of them lands inside Israel, you could have thousands of people killed. So it just so happened that Israel and multiple countries, including Arab countries, which I'm sure Iran never even anticipated that the Gulf countries would be helping Israel, all managed to knock all of these out of the air at a cost of over $1 billion. It was a miraculous defensive bit of work, but the technology in the West is so superior to what these savages have. So the idea, what happened after, it's like when Pee Wee Herman was riding his bike and he flew over the handlebars and he rolled down the hill and he somehow managed to stand up at the end of it and he said, I meant to do that. The idea that Iran did this and gave Israel a break is ludicrous. They're just incompetent morons is what they are. What should happen, knowing that they are so close to a nuclear weapon, knowing how insane that they are once they get a nuclear weapon, this is the window that Israel should be going in and absolutely obliterating all the nuclear stuff, all the oil fields, all the oil refineries, destroy the place. I think they should drop an EMP and they should knock out all the electricity and finally get rid of the mullahs. It's not the people of Iran. The people of Iran are being slaughtered by that group, the mullahs that are in charge. They need to get them out of power, because once they're out of power and Iran can go back to being a peaceful country instead of the worst Muslim terror state in the history of the world, the number one sponsor of terror in the world, that gets rid of Hezbollah and Hamas as they slowly die without the money from Iran. Think how many different countries Iran occupies right now and has destroyed. Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Gaza, not a country. Look at Lebanon. They don't even have electricity more than a few hours a day. Anybody with an IQ above 100 has left the country. You can't get money out of the bank. The country is basically an empty husk. All because of Iran, wherever they go. All the Gulf Arab countries that naturally hate Israel now support Israel because they've all been terrorized by the various proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis. You've got a whole bunch in Iraq as well. This is an opportunity. The idea that Israel should take this as just the status quo now, it's bad enough that every day they're getting rockets
from Lebanon from the north. They're getting attacked, mutilated, and massacred in rockets from the south. Now they've got to take it as a status quo that Iran is going to be sending these missiles over. It's ludicrous. Israel should be going in there and destroying the place once and for all. Now, this isn't the kind of war that they have with Gaza, where it's a guerrilla war.
Right. Iran's got a real military with real weapons.
Mm-hmm. And Israel will obliterate it if given the opportunity, because you can imagine that the technology is so much better. You saw it from the other night. This is the opportunity, because if they don't take it now and get rid of the savages in charge in Iran, what's going to happen is they're going to get nukes, and then they're going to be untouchable. And you know what's stopping all of this, Frank? You know what's stopping Israel from getting rid of Hamas and
the United States.
The United States, the liberal administration, I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, liberalism is a mental disorder, all right? If not for liberalism, you would not have these savages that are shutting down airport after airport, bridge after bridge throughout the country, walking around with Hamas and Hezbollah flags saying death to America. It's not just the Muslims from the Middle East. It's liberals. Liberals.
I mean, in fairness, I haven't heard Donald Trump say what you just said either. He has not been he's not said once that they should attack Iran or anything like that.
Well, tell me, what do you do when they get nukes, which is could be a year or less away? What do you do then with Iran?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a good answer for you. I don't at all.
I'm going to ask, what happens when they get nukes? What I would say to the liberals in your audience, the two or three that you have, I would ask.
I think we actually have a pretty diverse listenership, so it might be more. It might be four or five.
What I would say is, what do you do? What do you do when Iran gets it? Now they're going to be able to do whatever they want to all the countries in the Middle East who already hate them. I mean, what country? I mean, and also look how crazy our allies are. We've got Turkey that knew about the attack before it was going to happen. They're in NATO, Frank. They are in NATO. So if Turkey gets attacked, the United States is obligated to defend them.
Oh, I mean,
they knew about the attack.
I think there are way too many countries in NATO. So you view the proper policy for both Israel and the United States at this point to be regime change in Iran?
You know, I'm not talking about anything in subterfuge. I'm talking about absolutely obliterating them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what choice you have when you send 320 missiles that any one of them can kill hundreds, if not thousands, of Israelis. At what point do you say this is a war that you've started? You started it on October 7th by massacring with your proxies 1,200 Israelis. They started it. The idea, well, Israel started it when they killed some people at the Syrian No. It wasn't the Syrian consulate. It was the architect of the October 7th massacre, and it was another terrorist whose only purpose is to move weapons from Iran through Syria into Lebanon to be used against Israel. The idea that should then spur what happened after they already used one of their proxies, Iran, to kill, massacre, torture, burn alive 1,200 Israelis. Listen, the problem is that the status quo needs to change. The idea that Iran can use their proxies to kill people, and listen, they've killed Americans as well. The idea that they can do this and not have anything happen on their soil is ludicrous. Every single time a rocket comes from an Iranian proxy into Israel or kills Americans in Jordan, immediately there should be attack on Iran proper.
All right, so we will count that as a vote for not taking the win, as President Biden suggested. Jeff, I have to run.
How is that a win, Frank? Frank, let me just add one more thing, if I can, if I have a second.
Go ahead, real quickly. Though.
The idea that Blinken can say, well, the most important thing that matters to us are the civilians in Gaza. I have a question. What about the five Americans that are still being held hostage? Do they not matter to this administration? Liberalism is a mental disorder, period. Full stop, Frank.
On a much more upbeat note, at least it should be, but it may not be, depending on your response. Give me a prediction on the New York Mets from what you've seen this season so far. Last week or two, it seems like they've learned how to play baseball again. You think they make the playoffs?
No chance.
No chance.
They don't have the pitching. The pitching is just so weak. It's almost beyond belief. I think the team is actually scrappy. I think they're a decent team. They're finally playing good baseball, as you noticed. But the pitching, it's just not going to hold up. I don't foresee it happening. There's too many good teams in the National League. I don't even see them as a wild card.
Jeffrey Lichtman, if you want to hear more of this commentary, check out the Beyond the Legal Limit podcast. If you are thinking of committing a felony crime, make sure you have the number for his law office handy, and also make sure you have a great deal of money. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, be my guest, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. The sailors pass the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, "Brandy, fetch another round." She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, "Brandy, you're a fine girl.
It's to the top of the hour. This is Brandy. Tony, what it's a great song. What precipitated this? What any reason that we're playing this? Either topically
it just hit me because I played the two songs on your list, but everything else we don't have. So I just wanted to mix it up just a little bit.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Brandy, indeed. All right. If you want to comment, be my guest, 800-848-9222. Very pleased to report I took my son Carmine, at all of 2 years old, to the dentist yesterday for a checkup and a cleaning, and it went pretty well. You know, a lot of times I don't bring my wife with me to these because he cries a little bit more when she's around. He'll say, "Oh, mommy, hold you, mommy, hold you," and he does that a little less with me. And we went, and I felt bad because he didn't get much of a nap this afternoon, and he fell asleep in the car on the way to the dentist office. So I had to carry him in from his car seat into the dentist office while he's sleeping. And I carry him in, literally put him in the dentist chair while he's still sleeping. So he wakes up while he's, you know, still groggy in the dentist chair, seeing all these unfamiliar people. And he was very cranky. So then they said that he could sit on my lap, which he didn't mind. He didn't mind as much, but he still cried a little bit. And then, but he let them poke around his teeth. They counted his teeth. He's got 20, which apparently is appropriate for his age. They did a little light tooth brushing, and then they put a vitamin treatment on it. They still are giving him a hard time over him sucking his thumb. Well, giving us a hard time. And they said that the absolute cutoff should be 3. There can be no thumb sucking after the age of 3. They recommended, again, this device, this T-Guard device, which my wife ordered the last time we went 6 months ago, and they told us to get this. And she didn't want to have him use it. She thought it was a little too medieval and wouldn't be good for him for whatever reason. So then she said, if you don't want to use the T-Guard device, there's this polish that you can put on the thumb, which when he sticks it in his mouth, it'll taste bad, and that'll break him of the habit of sucking his thumb. So we may try that. We may try that polish to put on his thumb.
So we'll see. But overall, I thought, aside from a little bit of crying, it was a very successful dentist visit. They gave him a token. They have these little toys. I mean, they're worth probably 10 cents. They have these little toys that you can, almost like a vending machine that you'd see in a restaurant or something, where you put this token in and then you crank the handle and then a toy pops out. So they gave him a little mini yo-yo, and then he was such a good boy. He said thank you. They're impressed with his use of manners, and they empathized with him because he had just woken up from his nap. They gave him another token, and he got a little mini soccer ball. So that was our trip to the dentist. That was the big action yesterday afternoon. All in all, I would say it was certainly a success. Certainly could have been worse. You know, it was a little irritating, though. There were appointments at 5 o'clock, and they kept calling saying, hey, can you come earlier? No. How about we come at the time the appointment is? So they're doing away with the 5 o'clock appointments from now on. So this was our last 5 p.m. appointment. Keep asking questions.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.